Well, hello, this is Bob Sutherland from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the News and Observer's business section, what's left of it, the Triangle Business Journal. There'll be a couple of articles from Reuters, Bloomberg, and the Associated Press. Well, yesterday, the market closed down 551.80, second day in a row for the negative side, to close at 24,465.64. The S&P 500 slipped off 48.84 to close at 26,41.89. The New York Stock Exchange fell 232.25 to close at 12,048.66. And the NASDAQ closed down 119.65 to close at 6908.82. Well, cheaper gas, more parking at the Raleigh-Durham Airport for Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving travelers will find gas prices and the availability of parking at RDU Airport. They've improved lately. Let's start with gas. The average gallon, average price of a gallon of a regular unleaded in North Carolina was about $2.52 on Monday morning. It's about 20 cents cheaper than a month ago, according to AAA. Growing global oil production and slightly weaker demand are helping drive prices down, AAA says, though they remain about 13 cents a gallon higher than they were a year ago. As for parking at Raleigh-Durham over the weekend, the airport reopened nearly 1,200 spaces in Economy Lot 3 that had been closed since the summer for repaving. With about a third of the space in the park-and-ride lot available, Economy 3 and the airport's central garage often filled up this fall, leading travelers only Economy Lot 4 on the north side of the airport. It's been tough, RDU spokesman Patrick Glaze said, but we are looking forward to having our entire parking capacity available for holiday travel. The repaving of John Brantley Boulevard, the road that loops through the RDU campus between the terminals and the parking deck, has also been put on hold for the holidays. Repaving work on the road and Economy Lot 3 will resume in April after winter weather has passed. Now, even with all of the lots open, parking may be tight at RDU. Thanksgiving is one of the busiest travel weeks of the year, with nearly 250,000 passengers expected to pass through RDU, so said airport officials. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Sunday are expected to be especially hectic. RDU officials are encouraging people to reserve their parking spot in advance at parkrdu.com, the new online reservation system the airport has been testing since early this summer. Booking a spot 24 hours in advance guarantees travelers a space in the lot of their choice, though they'll still need to give themselves time to find the spot, park, and get to the terminal. For more information about parking at RDU, including rates and availability of spots, go to www.rdu.com/parking/period. Well, locally, the Triangle housing market has cooled in the third quarter. The Triangle has enjoyed years of growing home sales and new home construction, but third quarter numbers from a real estate data company show those trends could be slowing. While the number of new homes that sold from August to October continued to surpass last year, new home construction, also known as home starts, was flat. That's according to Metro Study. The word of the day is plateau, says Amanda Hoyle, Metro Study's Raleigh-Durham director. Now, last month, a report from appraiser Stacy Anfansen found that the number of homes listed on the market and the number of pending home sales actually dropped in the third quarter. The reports differ because Metro's study only looks at new homes, while N. Feinson includes sales of existing homes in his data. But combined, the third quarter numbers paint a picture of a housing market that could be showing the first signs of a slowdown that has taken hold in other parts of the country. Housing analysts in the Triangle are quick to point out that Hurricane Florence disrupted the home buying market for more than a week in September, likely contributing to the lower sales volume. But the rising cost of homes, coupled with a standard 30-year mortgage interest rates approaching 5%, could be dampening buyer enthusiasm, according to some analysts and home builders. Brent Chesson, president of Homes by Dickerson, says the third quarter was quite a bit off. Even the buyers we are seeing, they are very reluctant buyers, and it takes them a lot to get them over the finish line. That is translated to buyers being more aggressive in negotiations and people sometimes backing out of contracts. Rising prices also make it less likely for people to consider moving because there's no guarantee a homeowner can cash out of an existing home. There are just not good choices for people to move up, Chesson says. I think this pricing pressure has caught up with the Triangle. To make up for potential losses, Hoyle expects home builders to start offering more incentives to prospective buyers, such as lower closing costs. Builders may also put more effort toward building at lower prices, but that has been a difficult task in the face of rising land costs and labor prices, builders and analysts say. Now, for consumers, cheaper homes are becoming more difficult to find. In the third quarter, new homes priced under $250,000 represented about 25% of the Triangle new home market. A year ago, homes in that price range made up about 32% of the total market share, according to Metro study. Well, the cracks in the credit markets are growing deeper. They are widening as investors face their fears about the mountains of debt weighing on corporate America. If pressure began building last month, things blew up last week. High-grade bond spreads widened the most in nearly 2 years. Premiums paid for junk bonds jumped the most in almost 2 years. And the prices of leveraged loans sank to the lowest since 2016. As a result, companies selling bonds have paid a price. Now, this piece is from Bloomberg. It's going to be a pretty sloppy market through year-end, said Scott Kimball, a portfolio manager at BMO Global Asset Management in Miami. He goes on to say there's no data point we think will change directions between now and the end of the year. Now, General Electric woes added to the angst in the market. Investors are concerned the company's financial woes and massive debt pile may be the harbingers of broader problems in the corporate credit market amid rising rates and possible slower growth. Plunging oil prices have also driven concerns. Now, investment-grade bonds are on track for their worst year in terms of total returns since 2008 as the Fed continues to raise rates. The Bloomberg Barclays U.S. High Grade Bond Index showed spreads widened the most since February of 16. Trading volumes were up and new bond sales struggled. The recent widening began in early October, shortly after Treasury yields surged. A big bond issuance from DuPont last week failed to improve much from initial price thoughts, considered a floor for pricing on Monday. Takeda Pharmaceutical sales priced poorly when compared with similar deals. Well, again, this is from Reuters. The U.S. banking sector reported $62 billion in profits in the third quarter. That's up 29.3% from the same period a year ago. That's according to quarterly data from the FDIC. The regulator said in a statement that profits were boosted by a lower effective tax rate and higher operating revenues. Only 3.5% of banks reported net losses, down from 4% a year ago. The number of problem banks also fell from 81 in the second quarter to 71 in the third quarter. That's the lowest number since the third quarter of 07. Now, the FDIC's chair, Jelena McWilliams, said that while profitability was strong, the industry had seen heightened exposure to credit and interest rate risk as lenders search for higher yield loans. Attention to the prudent management of these risks will position banks to be resilient so that they can sustain lending. That's a report from McWilliams. The competition to attract loan customers has been strong, and it will remain important for banks to maintain their underwriting discipline and credit standards. Well, back to RDU, Southwest Airlines adds nonstop flights from Raleigh-Durham to San Jose. They'll begin nonstop flights between Raleigh-Durham and San Jose next June, becoming the only airline to offer nonstop service between the two cities. RDU officials have long sought nonstop service between the Triangle and Silicon Valley. The Southwest flights, however, will only happen one day a week. That's on Sundays, and airport officials are still hoping for more frequent service. The San Jose flights begin June 9. San Jose also announced Thursday that it will begin nonstop flights between Raleigh-Durham and Austin. The airline becomes the third to offer nonstop flights between the two cities after Delta and Frontier, but the only one to offer them every day of the week. San Jose is the 17th nonstop destination for Southwest from Raleigh-Durham, including seasonal service to Cancun, Mexico. Two airlines, that is Alaska and United, offer nonstop flights between RDU and San Francisco. Southwest is not the first airline to offer nonstop flights from the Triangle to San Jose. That would be Midway Airlines, the hometown carrier, that offered two daily nonstops between the two cities from November 2000 until its bankruptcy the following year. The Midway flights were the first nonstop round trips between Raleigh-Durham and the West Coast. American Airlines announced it would begin nonstop flights to San Jose in 2003, but scrubbed the service before it began when the airline got into financial trouble that year. And while we're on the airlines, it states here that Delta contractor lays off 320 at RDU. DAL Global Services LLC will lay off 320 employees at its operations located at the Raleigh-Durham International Airport. That's according to a notice filed with the North Carolina Department of Commerce. The layoffs are a response to the ending of a contract between DAL Global Services and Delta Airlines. The airline is planning to hire 670 full-time below-wing jobs at RDU, using internal staff for these operations instead of the outside contractor, according to the Triangle Business Journal. This will add to the existing 110 Delta employees working at RDU. Of the terminated employees, 246 are ramp agents and 60 are supervisor positions. Other cuts include employees such as managers, trainers, the city director, and an administrative assistant. The company said it will try to accommodate full-time employees who are willing to transfer to other locations with existing openings. Well, here's where a Raleigh entrepreneur pitches his reward stock on ABC's Shark Tank. With $20 airline tickets to Hawaii, Raleigh entrepreneur Jonathan Hayes enters ABC's Shark Tank on Sunday to pitch a local company that he says can help you get them. Reward Stock is a Kiri-based online company that helps users save money on travel by showing them how to earn and use frequent flyer miles and credit card points to pay for trips. It's the brainchild of Hayes, a former Wall Street investment banker who grew up in Raleigh and attended Leesville High and the North Carolina School of Science and Math. He got the idea for the company after spending 3 weeks researching how to use credit card points to pay for his honeymoon to the Maldives. He said he ended up paying about $200 for a $40,000 trip. Not long after that, the Princeton grad quit his New York City job and moved back to Raleigh to start Reward Stock, with a proprietary algorithm that could do that 3 weeks' worth of research in just a few seconds. He got help from local groups, Confounders Capital, and Startup Labs. Hayes appears on Shark Tank Sunday to try to convince one of its investors to buy into his company. Now, how Reward Stock works. In an interview with the N&O this week, Hayes said most people drastically underutilize credit card reward points in terms of how the points are accumulated and how they are used. He goes on to say most of us misuse their points and get less value than we could if we knew something about what we were doing. There are so many missed opportunities to earn points right in front of our noses. The site charges a $29 a year subscription fee, and in exchange, users take advantage of an algorithm that determines the best strategic way to use points to travel where they want to go. It will also recommend the best credit cards based on the specific trips you want to take. Once you have your points, you can book the trip directly from the site. The site doesn't deal with other types of rewards like cash back or gas rewards. It's a personalized strategy custom to your situation and your destination goal, said Hayes. It reviews your profile and calculates scenarios where you could combine points across programs to come up with the mathematically best strategy for you. It's different for each person and very personalized. So be watching Shark Tank this coming Sunday. Well, Uber plans to reward frequent riders. The program turns points into perks. This is from USA Today, as a matter of fact. If you use Uber frequently, you'll soon be rewarded for your rides. The ride-sharing company has launched an Uber Rewards program that will provide perks to riders for using its service. Available first in 9 cities in the United States, before rolling out to all U.S. riders over the coming months, the program is similar to the company's recently announced rewards program for drivers. On the list of initial launch cities are Miami, Denver, Tampa, Florida, New York, Washington, Philadelphia, Atlanta, San Diego, and parts of New Jersey. The program, which has been in the works for roughly a year, started from the premise that Uber today is really different from the Uber from 10 years or 8 years ago, says Nandu Jakarkream. He's Uber's director of product for rider experience. He says, what we found is that Uber is now this thing that people use every day, and we wanted to find a way to reward our customers who choose Uber every day and build a relationship with them. As with the driver program, Uber's ride rewards will dish out points depending on which Uber service is used, with the points unlocking different levels and levels opening up perks. Among the notable rewards are discounts on future rides, better customer support, and priority pickup at airports. Now, Uber Pool and Uber Eats orders will earn you 1 point per dollar spent, while Uber 10, 40, Select, and WAV, W-A-V, will get you 2 points per dollar. Users of the company's luxury black and black SUV services will earn 3 points per dollar spent. Jakarkream says the company will be adding points for using bikes and scooters in the future. Points can be earned regardless of whether the rider is using Uber for personal or business, or if they're using Uber gift cards, though there is no additional perk for using Uber's Visa card. Well, your dream of retiring early might not be a realistic one. Many workers look forward to retirement, and all it symbolizes a permanent break from the daily grind and the ability to pursue hobbies without restraint. But while plenty of working folks have pretty much resigned themselves to retiring in the late 60s or 70s, most Americans would rather call it quits much earlier. The ideal retirement age for U.S. workers today is 58 and a half. That's according to a new study by Go Banking Rates. Whether that's realistic, however, that's another story. Now, the challenges of early retirement, though retiring at any age means moving from a steady paycheck to a fixed income, there are certain challenges that come with retiring at the relatively young age of 58 and a half. For one thing, savings housed in a traditional IRA or 401k cannot be withdrawn without penalty before 59 and a half. To retire a year earlier than that, therefore, hinges on having enough savings in a traditional bank or brokerage account to cover the bills until retirement funds can be tapped. Then again, a large number of workers today won't get much from the IRAs or the 401ks in retirement if they don't ramp up their savings. An estimated 42% of working-age adults have less than $10,000 in long-term savings, which is hardly enough to have an impact during retirement, no matter what age it starts. Then there's Social Security to think about. Eligible seniors are allowed to start claiming benefits as early as age 62, which means that folks who retired 58 and a half can't access those benefits for a solid 3.5 years. Furthermore, filing at 62 means doing so ahead of full retirement age, and that's a dangerous move that could result in a permanent reduction in benefits, something that's apt to hurt seniors who don't have much in the way of savings. Now, finally, there's a health care to think about. Medicare eligibility doesn't kick in until age 65, so retiring 6.5 years earlier means having to absorb the cost of health insurance independently. Now, plan ahead to retire early. If your goal is really to retire early, then there are steps you can take to make that happen, the most important of which is to save consistently beginning at an early age. If you start setting aside $600 a month at age 23 and a half and continue through 58 and a half, you'd wind up with close to $1 million. If your investments were to generate an average annual 7% return during that period. And since that 7% is a few percentage points below the stock market's average, it's certainly doable over a 35-year time frame. Still, you'd also need to store some savings in a non-traditional retirement plan to gain penalty-free access to that money at age 58 and a half. But if you save in a Roth IRA, for example, or put some of your money in a traditional brokerage account, you can grow wealth and have easier access to your money later in life. Now, one more point here. Do not rush into retirement. Although retiring early has its benefits, it can be challenging not just from a financial perspective, but a mental one as well. Going from full-time work to an unstructured schedule can result in a fair share of emotional upheaval, so much so that the risk of depression increases exponentially once retirement kicks in. Now, if you're eager to retire at 58 and a half or thereabouts, because you're worried that you won't have enough time to fulfill your goals if you wait, consider that Americans are living longer these days, with 1 in 4 65-year-olds living past age 90, and 1 in 10 living past 95. Therefore, you might find that retiring in your 60s gives you the best of both worlds: access to the money, benefits and resources you need to stay afloat financially, and enough time to do the things you've always wanted to do. Well, a local company called Performance Bicycle, they've got to close stores now after its parent firm went bankrupt. The parent company of the Chapel Hill-based bicycle retailer Performance Bicycle has filed for bankruptcy protection, a choice that will lead to the chain closing a large portion of its stores across the country. Advanced Sports Enterprises, a Philadelphia company that bought Performance Bicycle just a little more than 2 years ago, has filed Chapter 11 for bankruptcy protection. The company said it took that action to restructure and better position itself for future success. That's according to a press release. Now, Advanced Sports CEO Patrick Cunane said in a statement that bankruptcy will eventually lead to store closures and layoffs. He says, while ASE is undergoing the Chapter 11 process, we will continue with business as usual, orders will be fulfilled, and performance bicycle stores will continue operating. Cunane said in a statement, employee layoffs and store closings are inevitable, but at this time, he says, I do not have enough information to announce those plans. The source of the company's financial woes since the merger has been sales at its physical retail operations. Along with Performance Bicycle, ASE also owns the bike brands Fuji, Kestrel, SE, Breeza Bikes, and Tuesday Cycles, as well as the retailer Bike Nash Bar. Cunane said sales of Fuji Bikes and Tuesday Cycles have been steady, but on the retail side, ASE has faced challenges increasing profits and improving sales since acquisition of its retail operations. Well, Kenneth Miller, a research assistant at Durham-based biopharmaceutical company, says interest rates were a big concern as he visited almost a dozen banks to get pre-approved for a loan to buy a house. After 8 years of saving money and living in apartments, Miller, age 29, is searching for a house in northern Durham and Wake counties in the $200,000 range. He says, I've been looking at interest rates, and they have been slowly climbing over the past year, so it has weighed pretty heavily on my decision, he said in a phone interview. Miller said when he was visiting banks, he mainly saw rates between 5.25% and 6%, before eventually landing an interest rate below 5% at a local credit union. He added that he wanted to jump into the market now because he was sure prices and rates were only going to increase. He goes on to say right now seems to be the time to do it because in the next year prices could become a little inhospitable to my income bracket, he said. In the triangle, it's not unusual for homes to be sold within days of hitting the market, often leading to them selling above the asking price. Homes below $200,000 have especially been competitive. The median sales price for a home in the triangle in October was around $259,000, which was a 3.5% increase from the year before, according to the Triangle MLS. The increased competition has contributed to many people feeling like they don't buy a house now, that if they don't buy a house now, they won't be able to later, especially in light of rising rates. For buyers, rising rates can mean a home they could afford earlier this year is no longer in their range. Eventually, that might lead to sellers needing to lower prices to attract buyers whose purchasing power has been affected by higher interest rates. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I do hope you've enjoyed it, and please be sure to listen next time. I'm Bob Sutherland, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974, and they can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. If you have any questions, please call us at 919-832-5138.